You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. In 2002, hoping to take hanging and pregnant chads out of our vocabulary, Congress passed the Help America Vote Act, and this law earmarked funds for states to upgrade their voting systems and replace punch cards and lever voting machines, and tens of thousands of new electronic voting machines, some looking a lot like your bank's ATM machine, are already being used to tally votes in presidential primaries around the country. But the path to electronic voting has already hit a few bumps in the road. Computer experts have been charging that some voting machines are open to tampering and fraud, and they want changes to be made. For example, take the state of Maryland. It spent $55 million on a new electronic voting system and in a noble effort to make the state's voting as accurate and user-friendly as possible. At the request of the state, a company called Raba Technologies put together a red team of computer scientists, sort of a squad to identify the security weaknesses in the new machines. And in the space of one day with a simulated election, the red team unlocked, broke down, and hacked into the voting machines and their electronic servers. So what about internet voting? Voting online also. Is that any more secure? Is that in our future also? In Michigan, plans to allow internet voting in this weekend's caucuses are overshadowed by the Pentagon's announcement yesterday to abandon its internet voting due to inherent security risks. Is it possible to make electronic and internet voting secure? What level of risk should we be willing to be prepared to accept? Can anything be perfect? And how can we mitigate that risk? Would requiring that all these machines have a paper trail, a backup paper ballot that can be recounted if necessary, would that make people feel more secure? But would it be any more accurate? That's what we'll be talking about for the rest of the hour. If you'd like to join us, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. Let me introduce my guests. Michael Wertheimer is the director of the Raba Innovative Solutions Cell at Raba Technologies in Columbia, Maryland. He joins us from his office. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much. I appreciate the gracious invitation.
Thank you. Douglas Jones is a member of the board and past chair of the Iowa Board of Examiners for Voting Machines and Electronic Voting Systems. He's an associate professor of computer science at the University of Iowa in Iowa City, and he joins us from Iowa. Welcome back to the program.
Well, hello, and thank you for your interest.
Michael, tell us about your experience with the Maryland voting system. What happened there? Give us a little thumbnail of what went on.
Absolutely. After the state of Maryland purchased some of the D-Bowl machines, a group of scientists at Hopkins University and Rice were able to get a copy of the source code. This is the code at which it's written, not the version that actually runs on the machine, the version that is written by the programmers, and discovered security weaknesses. The state then went and contracted with SAIC, a security experts, to do a review of the system. And then after that, they wanted one more security review on the SAIC report, which my team did. And as a result, we recommended that one of the things that hadn't happened was to set up the machines and put them in the actual environment in which we expect them to be run. And we recommended to the state this notion of a red team effort, which is to set them up, get yourself access to the machines and the software that's being used, and have a go at it. And that's precisely what we did.
And so you went in there and you discovered lots of different things that needed to be fixed.
I'm afraid so. The system comprised three main pieces. They're called the AccuVote touchscreen system. This is the touchscreen unit that the voter interacts with. That's number one. Number two is the software in the computers back at each local board of election and then one back at the state board of election. In Maryland, that's 23 counties, each with their board of election, and the state in Annapolis. That aggregates the results and provides the official counts. And then finally, the third component is how do they transfer the precincts to the local board of elections and then the local board of elections to the state. And that is done for the unofficial count via standard dial-up modem, the same thing you use to connect to AOL. So we investigated that. And in each of the three components, with more or less, depending on your own perspective, the ability to get caught, the ability to be observed, we found significant vulnerabilities.
Mm-hmm. Doug Jones, is this a typical vulnerability and might be on other types of voting systems?
Well, yes. The one of the places we know this is that when the state of Ohio heard about the Hopkins report, they contracted with CompuWare to do a study of the voting systems in use in Ohio. That included the Diebold system, and that included three other systems, one made by Hart InterCivic, one made by Election Systems and Software. I forget who made the other one. Mm-hmm. But the what they found is that all of these systems had noticeable flaws, and in effect they provided a third independent evaluation of the Diebold machine. I'm afraid to say that the root of the problem lies in the world of the standards we apply to our voting systems, and not to malice on the part of any particular vendor.
Expound on that a bit.
Well, the voting system standards we have today are set independently by the 50 states, but most of the states have signed on to a set of standards that were published by the Federal Election Commission, originally in 1990 and revised in 2002. The Federal Election Commission standards address many issues in the voting systems, but leave many issues very vague. They address, with what some people describe as the shake-and-bake tests, mechanical survivability of the system, but they don't address human factors, that is, the issues in the voting system that have to be dealt with by election officials and voters, and where the quality of instruction, the quality of screen layouts, the quality of ballot design. And they don't address many issues having to do with canvassing and accountability. Their general coverage of security issues is weak.
Give me an example so we can understand what you're talking about. For example, give me an example of one of each kind of issue they're not addressing.
Okay, a human factors issue. They dictate an error rate of no greater than 1 in 10 million for or is it 1 in 100 million? The error rate for counting votes, and that's a very nice-sounding error rate until you realize that it only applies after the vote gets into the electronics. It doesn't cover errors made by voters in interpreting the instructions. It doesn't cover errors made by voters in understanding how to cast a ballot. When you look at the data from Florida 2000, you find that losses from 2 to 10% of all ballots cast were reported, and almost all of those losses have to do with voter misunderstanding of instructions, voters not being instructed, with recount boards improperly applying rules that were actually quite unambiguous but were not applied by the rules.
So what you're saying is that the technical fix has been put in, but not the human side fix.
That's right. The human factors are a huge part of the conduct of elections. And in a sense, what we did is we responded to a human factors disaster by applying a technical fix without even bothering to state standards what we wanted.
But then how do you account for what Mike Wertheimer was able to do, which was to go in and hack the system?
Well, I don't think the technical standards address security very well either. One of his examples in the RABA report I found absolutely stunning, and that was the fact that they could pick the lock on the machine in 10 seconds. We studied an old lever machine in Iowa by accident. We couldn't find the key to it, and we wanted to open it up for a demo. We hired a locksmith to open the machine, and in an hour of working, he couldn't pick that lock. The old mechanical lever machines had decent locks. Why don't we insist on the same standard of physical security for our new machines?
Mike, do you think that these problems that you came up with are all solvable, technically?
Well, that's a great question, because most people in this business understand that security that relies on technology is a very bad model. Technology can't solve these problems, and Professor Jones is absolutely on the mark that you have to worry about the human systems. But our report, which was done for Maryland on January 19th, took into account the constraints that the state of Maryland had between now and March 2nd when our primary is. And we're pretty confident that in the short term, you can make physical fixes and procedures. But after this, we've made increasing demands on the Board of Elections come November and beyond in order for us to feel comfortable with the election. I think it's an extremely important question as time goes on, just how much security do you have to add as these systems become better known to people, and the determined, well-funded, well-orchestrated hacker can really go in and do some damage.
Is there really danger of that happening?
Well, one of the things, the criticisms I get, and this morning I've had a four-hour debate via email with people, is you have to understand, from my point of view, and my team had 71 years' experience working for the National Security Agency. So we've seen, and obviously I can't be specific, but we've seen what it means when a determined adversary who's beyond the laws of the United States tries to attack our critical infrastructure, you know, whether it be power systems, airlines, and so forth. If you believe, as I do, that voting in America is a piece of the critical infrastructure, then you have to have a model, a security model, ready to defend against that. And some of the larger states, certainly, like California, Texas, and so forth, had better be prepared to take that risk on with these electrical systems. And if that's the case, they're going to have to ramp up the security. And as Professor Jones points out, nowhere in this system today, from the manufacturer to the independent testing authority to the logic and accuracy testing done by the state, is security testing part of that procedure.
It's not.
No, the only security testing that's been done that's worth giving credit to these days is the response of Maryland and Ohio to what happened with the Hopkins report. And those two states get a lot of credit for doing this, but there are 48 more states to go and four territories.
Mm-hmm. I almost got the impression from what you were saying earlier, Doug, that even if we have these... And these terminals, right, they look like they're basically little computer terminals, and some of them that you point with your finger and touch the screen, that they may not produce any more accurate ballots than a paper ballot might.
Well, there was an election in Florida recently where they used direct recording electronic voting machines. It was an extremely close election. I don't remember the details. I think it was a difference of 7 votes between the two top vote-getters. And there are over 20 ballots unaccounted for at one polling place. We know how many people signed in to vote, and we know how many votes got counted by the direct recording voting machines. And there are these unaccounted for ballots. We have no idea where those electronic records went, and there's nothing but an electronic record. So there's a serious problem with auditing.
Mm-hmm. And that brings us to the issue of, should there be a paper trail on all of these terminals?
Well, my goodness, that is the question. And one of the things that the rich discussion has been, and here in Maryland, our recommendations in the report took into account what is it capable by November, so we muted some of our discussion. The two important questions to ask, in my opinion, are, first, to what extent are we willing to accept errors in the system? Paper ballots filled out by voters have a traditionally bad rate, as Professor Jones mentioned. Also, just every time they get smudged, you talk to Board of Election folks and they just tell you horror stories of boxes getting lost. They have to store them for 22 months by law and so on. So there's a high rate, as he pointed out. In the 2000 election, we had about 2% of the votes lost, couldn't be counted. So now if you add paper receipts, can we do it in a way that's cost-effective, yet at the same time doesn't dumb down our system and have a very high error rate? We have not seen any study to date. If you use a good quality printer and you add them to these machines to study the error rate that would ensue, at least with the electronic system, you can say in principle, or at least in theory, you can drive down that error rate to something we've never seen in the 100 years we've been using ballots. How do we balance the use of paper receipts so that we get confidence in the system? We mitigate the risks of the hacker attack and the quality of the software, yet at the same time don't end up buying a very, very expensive system that gets us right back to where we were last year.
Mm-hmm. Talking about electronic voting this hour and Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Doug, do you think that paper ballots will mitigate this problem?
Well, I think that paper ballots or a paper audit trail
right.
is a valuable idea. I'm not convinced that that paper is the only solution. I think there may be some emerging alternatives to paper. Unfortunately, these alternatives tend to rely on arcane cryptography, and I'm not sure I trust arcane cryptography any more than I trust paper. If you make the voting system so arcane that the people who run it and use it can't understand why it's secure without a PhD, I think you're running new risks. But there's another part of the problem, and that is our standards for canvassing elections. In many states in 2000, we actually had no official turnout figure. So all you have are the sum of the votes for the candidates. You don't even know how many ballots were actually counted. If the election system counted total voters who entered the polling place, total ballots counted, total votes for each candidate, and total incomprehensible votes, the ones that fall in the cracks, if we actually counted those, and we can, there is nothing preventing that, then the failure rates of our elections would be something that would be right out there public as part of the canvas, and we would be able to compare technologies far more easily. Right now in most states, we don't have enough information to figure out whether votes are being lost, much less make reasonable comparisons of voting technologies.
Is that because the states just don't want to keep track of them? Is it expensive?
I think it's because the people designing the counting basically haven't thought about auditability as a fundamental part of the conduct of elections.
Mm-hmm. I'd like to add that one of the things we checked about, people say the following statement: name an electronic transaction you have in your life where you're not provided a paper receipt. And we started to think about that argument. And we noticed, for example, banks lose billions of dollars a year to electronic fraud and abuse, yet they can put that in their business plan and indemnify you on your use of your credit cards by charging your higher interest rates. It's not dissimilar from businesses charging you for the clothes you buy. A little extra is put in there to cover you for theft, shoplifting, and so on. It's part of their business plan. It's cheaper for them to charge you more than it is to hire guards to protect at the door. We can't treat voting that way. We're not allowed an acceptable shrinkage level in voting. So those models are very difficult to apply. And I absolutely agree that without standards, both for security, but for how much we're willing to tolerate in terms of any system, because there's no perfect system, we're flying blind in terms of an industry that doesn't have to build to any standards. Independent testing authorities, that are only, which, by the way, are paid strictly by the vendors to test to make sure that it functions correctly, but not to do the security mm-hmm. testing. And now we're relying on our state boards of election to be intelligent IT professionals.
All right. We're going to come back and talk with Congressman Rush Holt. He's going to tell us about his bill and other bills in Congress to require that we have a paper trail. Stay with us. We'll be right back. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Noyce Foundation, dedicated to improving math and science instruction from kindergarten through grade 12, and supporting NPR's Science Friday, sciencefriday.com. From the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. From the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation, and from the Dibner Fund, encouraging the understanding of science and technology in our lives. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
I'm Ira Flatow. Is the word evolution a controversial buzzword that should be removed from biology curricula? Join me on the next Science Friday for the continuing controversy over teaching evolution in schools. Plus, physicist Brian Greene talks about his new book, The Fabric of the Cosmos. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A brief program note. Join Lynn Neary on the next Talk of the Nation in this hour on Monday for a look at that famous wardrobe malfunction, how it's turned the issue of broadcasting decency standards into a political football. We're talking this hour about electronic voting technology. There is a fair amount of interest in Congress to require that all voting machines create a paper trail, and my next guest has introduced federal legislation that would require a paper record of each vote, one of the first to do that as a backup to any computerized voting system. Joining me now by phone from Virginia to talk about the bill is Rush Holt, U.S. Congressman, Democrat from New Jersey, former Assistant Director of the Princeton Plasma Physics Laboratory. Welcome back to the program, Congressman.
Ira, it's your old friend and fan, Rush Holt. Good to be with you.
Thank you. So when we last talked back in September, how has your bill gathered steam since then?
Well, week by week, it's gained more co-sponsors. We're well over 100 now from both parties.
Mm-hmm.
For a while, it was only one party. But then last November's election in Virginia had some questionable results that the other party felt affected them, and suddenly they realized this could cut both ways.
So I'm
pleased that it's gaining bipartisan support. It's as some of your listeners probably know, this has a very active life on the internet now. All over the country, people are talking about it, and I'm pleased to say that Americans are quite obviously interested in the sanctity of their voting. They care about their democratic process.
And what kind of paper trail does this bill require?
Well, my bill requires several things, including, you know, no Wi-Fi, wireless connections, and open source code, and also random spot checks, audits in 0.5% of all the precincts. But the central part of the bill is that there must be a voter verification system that consists of an independent paper record. And so as the voter is voting, say on a touchscreen machine, for example, there would, before the vote is actually recorded, there would be available for the voter to inspect a hard copy of the vote. And the voter can say, yep, that's my vote, and then submit both the electronic and the paper recorded vote. And the paper vote is available for recount if either a judge orders it or, as I say, in 0.5% of the cases. That is the vote of record.
Is there any way to keep track of how many people actually went into the voting booths versus how many people voted? We were talking earlier about there's a discrepancy sometimes where the votes are now virtually missing instead of hanging by chads.
Sure. Well, in almost every jurisdiction, there is a procedure for that. You sign in a book or somehow present identification, and they say, okay, you're voter number 73 this morning. So they do keep track of that, I think, in every jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. And there was this problem recently that I'm sorry, I didn't get to hear your discussion earlier this hour, but maybe someone has mentioned the fact that I guess recently in Florida, when there was only one item on the ballot, there were some people who showed up to vote who didn't vote on that item. And so it does raise questions about the system.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about. And do you think this? I know there's a sister bill to it in the Senate. Barbara Boxer, Hillary Rodham Clinton, Bob Graham are co-sponsors. Do you think this is going to get passed before this November? Do you think?
It's possible. A few months ago, I would have thought that it was very unlikely. It's coming around. On the Senate side, it is Senator Graham's bill that is closest. In fact, it's identical to the bill that I have in the House of Representatives. Senator Boxer's, Senator Clinton's are variations on this. There is growing interest, and I hear from members from all over the country that it's one of the hottest topics that they hear about in town meetings and so forth. So that is, all of that's promising.
Well, Congressman, I want to thank you for taking time to talk with us.
It's good to talk with you, Ira.
Good luck. Congressman Rush Holt, Democrat from Virginia, talking about from New Jersey, talking about the bill he has in Congress to require a paper trail. Every time you cast your vote, they'd have to make a paper ballot copy of that so it could be used in recounting. Also with us is Doug Jones and Mike Wertheimer. Gentlemen, where do we stand here? You talked about the problems. Mike, you talked about how you're able to hack into the Maryland system, but you think that's fixable, but you're worried about the overall you know, turning our voting people now into IT professionals. Is there a way that you see clear that we can make all of this work?
We made a proposal in the short run that I think should be thought about in the long run, which is to require the vendors to provide their software for security testing, which would then, using technology, be digitally signed. So that means it couldn't be changed, essentially, and both prior and after an election, be able to validate that that software did not get modified through any sort of changes in the system, through any Trojan horses and viruses and so forth. Limit it total exposure to the Internet or modem, shut that off completely.
No Wi-Fi like the kind
Nothing.
Of thing was it. Yeah.
And finally, every things that talk to each other, whether it be the smart card you put in the machine, whether it be the supervisor closing the election down, all use strong authentication. And then finally, at the end, have every machine equipped to take a printer, but perhaps not have to have every single terminal have a printer. Today, if Maryland were to put a printer on every single one of its 16,000 workstations, it would, in the short term, cost about $9 per vote. And we know that that's not possible in the near term. If these things could be done, we felt more confident that the system would be worthy of voter trust, but there are very, very legitimate arguments on the other side. And when you get pretty far out, you know, well, what about this scenario, and what about that scenario, and what about the insider threat if he gets this, this, or the other thing, we start to worry about threats that I think just about any system would have.
1-800-989-8255. Carol in Shakopee, Minnesota. Hi, Carol.
Hi. Thank you very much for presenting this important issue. I commend Congressman Holt for sponsoring the accountability verification system by independent parties, because I think it's in vital importance to pass this legislation before the presidential election.
That's it? Just wanted to say that?
Well, I have several concerns.
Yeah.
And the first one is, I read an article in the November 2003's Popular Science edition that compared five different ways to cast a vote. And they said that most computer scientists vote no on the current direct voting electronic systems because they're impossible to audit and vulnerable to hackers, and tabulation software is proprietary, so there's no way for anyone to check the validity of recorded votes.
Doug Jones?
Well, I'm one of those most, and I certainly agree. I guess that's really all I need to say to that. I agree.
Well, is there any way that you can see it getting better?
Well, I think that we could do the recommendations in the Rabba report, and the fact that they have phased them, so they have recommendations what can be done immediately, they have recommendations what we can do by this fall's elections, and they have long-term recommendations. I like that phasing. I am suspicious of attaching printers to only selected machines, because we know too much about how to write malicious code that would behave perfectly honestly when it's being watched, and would be only dishonest when it discovers it's not being audited.
Let me ask both of you, Doug and Mike, if we have an election that's as close as the kind we had last time, and nationally and in, let's say, a state like Florida, where, you know, it's just handfuls of ballots, would an electronic system be any more accurate than if we had those chads and you know, and paper ballots?
I think it certainly has that potential to be more accurate. The question you really want answered is, with the technology today, am I comfortable in saying it would be more accurate?
Yes.
I think if Maryland's system, as I understand, and that's what I do understand, the answer would be an unqualified yes. But I want to point out two contradictory facts, and that is, you know, they say if you go into a restaurant and you work in the kitchen, you never go out again. And that's true of computer science. When you see the kind of vulnerabilities, you don't trust any system. But I should say, on the other hand, as a person from NSA, I have a beautiful house here in Maryland, and it's paid for by the hubris of people who think they can build secure systems.
Let me remind.
Can I make a brief
comment? Sure. Let me just remind everybody that I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Go ahead.
Okay. The it's worth noting that if you look at Florida 2000, just at the optical MarkSense paper ballots, which I've studied in depth, you find the error rates on those, that is, the rate at which votes were lost, varied between 0.5% and 4%, depending on what county you were in, even with identically the same vendor's equipment. There's obviously a difference between those counties on on how they were administering the system. And it's fair to ask, could we do better than we're doing simply by properly administering the systems we have versus by replacing a system which can be well administered with another system that we don't yet know how to administer? I think that's a very serious question, because I would love it if we could get down to that 0.5%. That's comparable to what people have achieved with direct recording electronic voting machines.
Okay, so you're saying that the human element and how many steps that those ballots go through is so leaky at this point, just by, if you could tighten that up, you could save, you can make it much more accurate than by changing the systems at this point.
And there's also the question of the complexity of the administrative rules. If you have administrative rules which you have to be a genius to follow, it's not a very good idea. It's really difficult to design computerized systems that are really easy to use, and ease of use for the voter and ease of use for the election official of the entire system, from unlocking the polls in the morning all the way through filing that final piece of paper in the evening, from starting to set up for the election months beforehand to finally signing that final copy of the official totals at the end. The complexity of that whole system is something we have to look at.
Mm-hmm. Matt in Cornish, Utah. Hi, Matt.
Matt, hello.
Yes, go ahead, quickly.
Thank you. My question is, if I can file my taxes online using my adjusted gross income and Social Security numbers, personal identification numbers, is there a possible way in the future that we can then do voting from home using similar personal identification numbers? And then the follow-up would be, is with the associated increase in voter participation because of the ease of use perhaps outweigh the security implications?
All right, good question. How close are we to Internet voting? The Pentagon did away with it. They thought they would use it, but they've done away with it because of security issues. Is that even another whole can of worms to open?
Well, I haven't had a chance to look at this Internet voting system, the SERV system that was put forward, but given my hesitation with what we have with the electronic system today, which does not touch the Internet, and the amount of fixes that we need to put in place now, I just, as an ordinary citizen with perhaps a little more technology wherewithal, leaves me very cynical that we're ready to do this. Now, what this gentleman described is different than the sort of attacks they're worried about. For example, denial of service. It doesn't do anyone a lot of good to file false 1040 forms with the IRS, as opposed to it is in many people's interest to falsify votes and throw many, many votes into the system.
Mm-hmm. And you agree?
I agree fully.
And so we're not close to coming to an Internet voting system yet.
Right.
I agree.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you both for taking time to talk with us this hour. Michael Wertheimer, director of the Rabbit Innovative Solutions Cell at Rabbit Technologies in Columbia, Maryland. Douglas Jones, member of the board and past chair of the Iowa Board of Examiners for Voting Machines and Electronic Voting Systems, and associate professor of computer sciences at the University of Iowa in Iowa City. Thank you both for joining us.
And thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you. Our program is produced by Annette Heist, Eric Allman, senior producer Karen Vergoth, and Charles Berquist as our web producer. If you'd like to get back issues of Science Friday, surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. You can download past issues of Science Friday in the audible.com player, any kind of player that will take that. Listen on Real Audio. Next week, if you're going to be out in Seattle, we're going to be out in Seattle ourselves. We're going to be out there at the convention center. So why don't you drop on by and come and watch a live version of Science Friday, sit in the audience. You can ask questions like we do on the phone, but be there in the audience. If you're at the annual meeting of the AAAS meeting, which will be out there, we'll be there too. Drop by Science Friday at the convention center. That'll be next Friday. I'm Ira Flatow in New York.